by our willingness to rectify errors and convert them into assets.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 12. Today, I had the privilege of talking with former Apple designer Cal Michael. And it's funny because his superhero name totally went over my head at first. He's Kal-El. Kal-El, son of Krypton, a.k.a. Superman, folks. You knew that. Doesn't get more super than that, but I guess it reveals that I'm more of a Marvel guy, much to Dan Mull's dismay, I would imagine. More on that in a future episode. Anyway, great talk with Cal. Can't wait to share it with you. Cal Michael is a passionate UI and experience designer and has been affecting change and improving lives through his design work for the past 14 years. 5.5 of those years were spent as lead creative at Apple, improving the retail corporate site experience and building internal sites for enhanced communications. He's utilized his expertise in iOS and Mac design solutions through his design of the award-winning PDF Expert app. He also has a meticulous attention to detail, always remains open and teachable in advancing the tech industry. One way he's doing that is through his work as a mentor with Cascade SF. Welcome, Cal. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Super psyched to be here. Thanks.
All right. So every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show out by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
Sure. I recently moved here full-time to the Bay Area. I live in San Francisco. I am born and raised in Miami Beach. My family's from there, so it's kind of a little bit of a rare breed. You know, people from Miami Beach or from San Francisco, they were actually born and raised there. It's not very common. but I got to experience a lot of great moments in history and just how things evolved in Miami Beach, and it was a fantastic experience. It quickly became very touristy. Yeah. So I got a really good opportunity working with Apple, and ended up living in the Bay Area part time for several years before I moved here full time. And I just fell in love with the place. And after I saw that most of my money was coming from this area, I was like, why am I living on Miami? Why am I living in Miami? Like, I need to go. I need to move. I need to finally be here full time.
Awesome. So you made the trek out, huh?
Yeah. You know, and done a lot of things, you know, throughout the course of my, you know, personal life and career, traveled a lot, in the whole musician world for a bit. You know, I dreamed of being a rock star most of my life, kind of following my dad's footsteps. He was a pretty established musician back in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. But throughout all that, you know, I've been, you know, tinkering with computers and doing design ever since Photoshop 2. I mean, not that I'm necessarily proud of this, but I at one point in time, I hacked Prodigy to do some interesting things. I think the statute of limitations is passed by now, but I've always found a connection with it, and it's such a blessing to be able to do what I love for a living. And it's been like that for a while, and it didn't come easy. But if you fight for it, I think everybody has a chance.
Hmm. Photoshop was so much harder back then. Right?
Like, yeah.
I think all you really had were layers. Everything else was pretty much handcrafted, I think, for the most part. I mean, not a lot of automation and helpful tools yet.
Yeah, I remember when the magic wand happened. That was like a revelation. And then, you know, having the ability to do more than one undo.
Right, yeah.
That was really nice, you know.
God bless the undo menu.
Yeah, you know, sometimes what I would do is to create my own pseudo layer, I would go ahead and print something out if I messed up, and then do it by hand and then scan it back in to continue going. I actually did this quite a lot, so there was a lot of that kind of work, and it was just part of the craft, I guess.
Yeah, I respect that, man. I started on Photoshop 4, so much easier then, but definitely respect that and your scrappiness there, man. So, hey, Cal, tell us your starting out story. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
That's a fantastic question, because I don't fall into, I really don't have that answer. I don't fall, that question doesn't necessarily apply to me, because when I was doing it, that position didn't exist. Uh-huh. So it was more of a coming to and realize, oh my God, what I do could be something that's really useful. And my obsession with history, storytelling, time travel, and fighting for the user can actually be something, you know, that can impact product, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even align it with it in general. I mean, at the time, I was, you know, I started working with Apple, and then on the side, I was basically doing a hella amount of freelance work, mostly mm-hmm. icon design. And I thought that's really what I wanted to do. And I was, I had a lot of fun doing it. And but I thought that was the main thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, this whole movement happened where people were really thinking about, you know, really building things for the end user and not just building Me Too type products, you know, and people started to care about that, you know, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's just something I've always cried out and cared about. And you're telling me I can, you know, I can actually do this, you know, this is something. And then, once Stanford created that course, because they were the first to do it, the rest is history. It just blew up.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I appreciate your honesty, too, about, you know, this wasn't really as much of a movement back when you and I started doing this. It was like web design. And then, you know, excuse me, Donald Norman and Jacob Nielsen, you know, especially Jacob Nielsen were really the kind of early advocates for user experience. And, you know, I just remember I really didn't have much respect for Jacob Nielsen early on, because his site looked like crap. You know, site. I mean, it was like, dude, if you look at his site in the 90s, it was really ugly, but I guess it worked. I guess it was usable. So anyway, all that to say, I appreciate that answer, and I appreciate how far this this research-based design field has come, known as UX now. So thanks for that.
No, absolutely. And it's just another way for, you know, for people in the creative field to leverage themselves and have a life doing what they love, which is fantastic.
Amen. Hey, if you were doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
You know what? I don't have a backup plan at all. Like, this is definitely me. And I think that as the waves kind of go, you know, I know for sure. I mean, I see it every year. It's going to evolve and it's going to grow, but I really don't have a backup plan. I've been doing this for it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be close to half my life in a couple of years, and that's pretty crazy. And I just, I've done stuff before in the past that's taken me to this point, mm-hmm. but none of it really would I choose to do it. So no, this is pretty much it for me. I love service work, but at the same time, it's fun to align service work and volunteering with, you know, with this genre, you know, which is, you know, things that I do with mentoring, whether it's with Cascades or mm-hmm. or other groups that I work with, or people that I reach out to. So yeah, no, that this is it for me.
Yeah, and I love that you work with Cascade. I actually, Andy was on episode 5 and just really loved her.
Yeah, she's great.
She's great. Loved her insight and, you know, especially really being a champion for mentoring and really putting that to action, not just talking about it, but she does it and she brings along great folks like you. And I also had Chloe on the show, Chloe Bregman. She was the episode after on 6. So I think, you know, I was thinking about this. I was like, oh, it's interesting. I think I found you guys through Cascade. And I just love having, you know, people like you on this show because your heart is to help people. And that's really the whole heart of behind this show is really how can we help give back and serve and bring up and help bring up that next generation. So I appreciate that, Cal.
Yeah, you know, we grow by our willingness to rectify errors and convert them into assets. And I've made a lot of good mistakes. And one of those is is really letting my ego get the best of me. And I've been beaten into submission and really shown the way that that's just it just doesn't benefit anybody. And and one other thing, and I hate to keep up doing these little quotes, but you know, you can only keep what you have if as long as you're willing to give it away, you know. And
love that.
And it's just how it keeps me level, because I definitely can have a huge ego. I did it when I was a professional musician, and I was not. I mean, even though people will kind of look back, and I'll talk to people from my past and be like, "Oh, you weren't so bad." I'm like, yeah, no.
Dude.
So I'm happy to be of service.
You and me both. I completely identify with that. And I think anyone who's truly successful in this field has learned to let their ego die and just really, you know, fight for the people, fight for the users. And, you know, so thanks for that.
It's continuous, man. You gotta, it's not, you know,
that's true.
It's a subtle foe, man. It's a subtle foe. I mean, you see it all the time, especially in the design community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not necessarily going to point fingers at anybody, but it's just, you know, it's just not helpful. It doesn't really help. I'm repeating myself, but the point is that it's all about separating opinions from intent. And I think that, you know, everybody could define that differently, but for me, you know, separating opinions from intent is just so important, you know. And it really allows for helpful critique and feedback versus, you know, the snooty, "This is crap, this is garbage," you know.
Right.
Which is just not helpful.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Cal, who has been the biggest inspiration in your work and why?
Oh, man. Well, you know what? God, I feel like kind of a little schoolgirl saying this, but probably Mike Mattis. You know, I've been following his, you know, I've been following his career ever since. I think we crossed at Apple once at some point. But he's just had his hands in some of the greatest things in the app boom history, you know. So as far as people that do what I do, because I consider, you know, he's in my field, you know, aside from that, I really go for just powerful strategists like Tony Ulrich. He invented outcome driven innovation, which is my strategy that I use for, you know, what we call UX.
I feel like a little girl for not knowing who Mike Mattis is.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I mean,
I'll look
he
him
did
up.
Everything. Yeah, he did everything from designing the iPhone camera to Apple Maps to the Nest. More currently, paper from Facebook and instant articles, because he and his wife worked for Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to definitely have to use Google on that one.
Yeah, and he takes beautiful pictures, too. He travels a lot, and his captures are gorgeous. His little travel journal and stuff. It's fun.
Excellent. Cal, what's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
I would say that having a good work-life balance, has helped more than anything during this leg of my career. I went into this profession in 2001, you know, and when I mean profession, I've been doing it longer than that, but where I became incorporated, had a business, and was doing work for hire steadily, right after, like at the tail end of the dot-com boom, and it's, you know, it was hard. It was really hard, you know. I was 21 years old, and it was extremely hard for me to balance. You know, I'd be working and just, you know, on energy drinks till like 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just being neurotic. Didn't know when I stopped work. Didn't know when I started. Didn't know what days off were. And it really spiraled. And I mean, I made a decision to close that business at the time when I was offered the position at Apple, at least when I started at Apple. But it was because I drove myself crazy. So having a really strong work-life balance has helped in this leg. You know, my current business has been incorporated since June of 2012, so it's gonna be 4 years now here in San Francisco, and everything good's come from that. You know, I structure my schedule around my clients. You know, I have an open door policy, but at the same time, I have clauses in regards to my days off and how I can work and function. And that really helps me. That really helps keep me strong for my work side, you know, by having a personal life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, it goes back to that first question that you talked, the first question that you asked, which was in regards to what would I do if I wasn't doing this?
Yeah.
And the truth is like, I can go ahead and say, you know, eat awesome food and travel and play guitar and all these things that I do outside of work. But the thing is that, you know, I already had a hobby that became a career. You know, and I'm happy with that. And I like keeping my hobbies and my interests personal. You know, it helps me keep my professional, you know, and it helps me keep going, especially how fast everything advances. You know, I mean, it's hard to keep up. It takes a lot of work and time.
Mm. So many good things out of that, Cal. And I just want to reflect on a couple of takeaways for me.
Sure.
You know, one of them was about, you know, about the work-life balance. I mean, that is so critical because burnout is a reality. And it seems as though even as a freelancer, especially as a freelancer, I think that is one area where you got to be even more intentional about creating that work-life balance, because there's this, maybe this myth about, you know, when I'm a freelancer, when I have my own business, I can make my own hours. Well, sometimes a lot of freelancers end up working on holidays and things because, you know, they don't, it's just them. So it's really critical to hustle, but to also create that work, that healthy work-life balance. And the other thing I want to say is, you know, I loved how you said, you know, about not having a fallback plan and how your hobby is your career. How lucky are we can say that? So,
yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's all about, you know, for me, it's really been about having that structure and that refinement of skill sets and really being able to make decisions. I think most of our pain and our troubles and struggles is when we haven't made a decision with something. You know, freelance versus contract, you know, I have this talk a lot with people, especially, you know, I have people reach out to me in regards to them, you know, wanting to go independent, or they have gone independent, and asking me, you know, how do I get clients? How do I set expectations? And, you know, I have this discussion quite frequent, and it, you know, I think it's important to stick to your decisions, you know, and set that proper expectation. And, you know, it's fearless and it's bold, but let me tell you, you know, the confidence in that and the structure that you'll gain from it could really make a huge impact.
Love it. Let's get into your transformation, Cal. What is your design superpower?
Well, you know, it's so trendy, and I'm going to be posh and be like, I was talking about this before it was cool. But But it really is empathy. But I'm going to go a little bit deeper than that, you know, because I say empathy because, you know, with, like I said, like I mentioned briefly before, I do practice ODI and I encourage, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but I you know, if it comes up, but I encourage finding your own strategy, but you have to align with, you know, who are you actually building something for, you know, and having that empathy and actually caring about, you know, what it, not just the functional job, but the emotional job, it makes all the difference in the world. But here's where it goes deeper. There's something that, you know, having empathy is actually, I really don't see empathy as something that you practice. I see empathy as a result. And that is a result of patience and perseverance. And that's where the strength, that's where the fight is done, is just having the appropriate amount or appropriate type of patience and perseverance, you know, to solve that emotional job.
You know, it's like, you know, of course, function over form, but let's not forget about form. So I appreciate that. And Aaron Walter's book, Designing for Emotion, really transformed my perception on that radically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, I, a lot of my background is in back end and internal solutions, you know, so I was challenged with that. And I'm really grateful that I was challenged with that and really being able to, okay, so we are presenting figures and we're giving daily stats to our team members. And I'm talking vague because obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
How can we make this a pleasurable experience for them, you know, and having those challenges, it's not like, okay, it's not the person that goes and says, okay, I want to make a Twitter client. I want to make the next camera app. And it's, you know, it's easy to make those fun,
you right. know,
but how do you make sale? You know, if you were tasked to redesign a piece of, you know, of the CRM in Salesforce, what would you do? You know? And that's, I love those challenges. I really do. Yeah.
Nice, nice. Adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
Oh my God. So I mentioned it a little bit before, and this is definitely number one, which would be my ego. But what follows up with that, with little control, because I do fall into the category of one of those emo, sincere-hearted dudes. And this is fear. Fear. You know, it's fear of fear. Well, it's always fear. Fear of the unknown, you know, can definitely get you. But it's, you know, fear is the number one enemy to, you know, to confidence. And you know, confidence is such a key role in this, especially, you know, playing the strategist role, doing UX, you know, you're often tasked to work with, you know, a lot of people are, you know, directives or, you know, the directors, or, you know, directly to the decision makers, you know, in a company. And it's, you know, fear can definitely get you. And if I was going to say one more thing that kind of just pops in my head that I'm always fighting against, and that is trends. I hate design trends. I hate the talking against design trends. I hate anything connected to them. And I really don't use the hate word very much, but it's like, oh my God, if I, you know, here reading it on Twitter, it's just so obnoxious. It's like, okay, well now we're going to call the menu button the hamburger button or something. Or why don't you go ahead and design, you know, flat design? And it's like, you know what? Like, why don't you design and solve the problem, you know? And, you know, if it turns out to be skeuomorphic, if it turns out to look flat or minimal, then that's what happens. But just doing things blindly is a definite enemy to our, you know, to our field.
Wow. Man, I love that. especially, you know, talking about trends. And it's funny, I wrote a little something about that recently. But it's one of those things where it's like, it's so easy to get stuck in, you know, I mean, because there's a trend, maybe because there's a good reason for it, maybe because there is effectiveness to it. However, I think that what happens is we kind of go on autopilot occasionally, because, well, we are under maybe a time crunch, or we have all these different devices or different things to design for, and we end up just sort of going autopilot, defaulting to, okay, well, this is a trend, so I can just kind of stay safe here. So I appreciate that answer, and you know, and about fear too, touching on that, something I heard the other day, which I loved, is just, you know, fear missing an opportunity more than you fear failure.
Yeah.
Is that good?
No, absolutely. That's great.
That's not mine, so I can
that's good.
Compliment that one.
Very good.
All right. Tell us a story. And now this is an area where, actually, pardon me, Cal. This is where we want to talk about your UX design superhero name. Now, what would yours be? And the caveat that I know none of us do it on our own, and we all need each other. But what would your UX design superhero name be, Cal?
I'm going to keep this really simple. I already have one. My name is Cal. So that's, you know,
love it.
I'm son of Krypton.
That
I already have a superhero name, so I'll just keep it. I'll keep it very simple.
That's awesome, man. That's great. So let's get into failure. Now, this is an area too where it's hard to talk about it. And, you know, of course, with our egos, it makes it even harder. But we know, and I know that you're mature enough and you're experienced enough in this industry that you've learned a ton through various failures in your career. Can you tell us a story about maybe what's been your biggest one in your career?
You know, this is a really hard, it's definitely a hard one to talk about, but I love, you know, just having a well-rounded discussion. And I think I think talking about, you know, opportunities, challenges, you know, aligned with, you know, strengths is just, it's really important. It's really important to give that fair picture. It's not, you know, you know, even with social networking, a lot of people, they take pictures of themselves or they take pictures of situations only during the good times. And honestly, during the good times, my phone's nowhere to be had, okay, because I'm having a good time. And the last thing I'm doing is jumping into my phone, you know, and it'll usually happen from others. So I'm more representing reality in regards to the bad times, you know, and the other side, and not, you know, and like I said, they're, you know, it's not all negative, but they're challenges, and it's important to give this all around picture. And I'm really a fighter for that, you know, because people see what, you know, they just see what they are and they get the wrong impression of what things really are. And then they're modeling their life according to that, whether it's, you know, somebody growing up and having a self-image issue, you know, seeing these photoshopped images and thinking that that's what it's supposed to be, to, you know, to the designer posting about, you know, this is me traveling all the time and, you know, living this luxurious life when I know they have a studio apartment here in San Francisco and they're like have zero money in the bank, you know. It's like, come on, like, what is this? Is not helping. So I really like this question, but at the same time, you know, I can't think of really big things. I could say that any time that I don't challenge the user experience, that is a failure. And I can connect it to this one time, and if he's hearing this, he's gonna get a kick out of this. But I was working with events at Apple. And I remember I was tasked by my lead to do these signs that were marking just where everybody was sitting, and I followed his direction. And here's where I mean it's aligned with any time I didn't challenge the experience. And in following his direction, I printed these things, and they weren't even readable. You know, you know, because I did it exactly how it says. And that was, that is a great example of things of how we fail, like, all the time, you know, not challenging the experience, you know, right away we noticed these after they were done and just were like, oh my God, what is this? And we ended up reprinting them and then just changing the orientation, and voila, it worked. But that's something, I know it's kind of small, but that's the only thing I could stick out that stands out. And I can more talk to the philosophy of failure, you know, more than actual experience or grand experience in my career.
Well, I love your philosophy on failure and your authenticity as well, and not, running from that question, you know, facing it head on, not just in this, I'm not just talking about this interview, but in your life, you know, and in your work, and we all do tend to put our best foot forward on social media. I think that's a problem. I think that, you know, there's an artificial sort of sensibility, that's everyone's sort of accepted and embraced. And, you know, I think especially it happens on Facebook and, you know, there's just, it sort of makes you go, well, what am I doing wrong? Or what, you know, it's like, well, no, you don't, you're not with them the other 23.75 hours of the day, you know, after they posted that post. And, you know, we all have issues. And I think we will all be better if we're just a little more authentic about that.
Yeah, my perception's just, you know, my perception's always been different when it comes to this. You know, I'm going to repeat myself, but, you know, as I mentioned it very quickly, we grow by our willingness to rectify errors and convert them into assets. You know, so when it is something that when I do fall, I am able to see it as an opportunity. And I just, you know, even when it came to, you know, my career as a touring musician, where I was, you know, for a short time, a professional touring musician. And all of a sudden I came home and I realized I spent all the money that I made on tour and I didn't have anything. You know, we can go ahead and call that, you know, we can call that a failure. But I saw it as an opportunity to redirect. And I went back to my, you know, my digital design roots, and the rest is history, you know. So was that really a failure?
Hi, it's Koyvin from Subtraction.com and Adobe, and you're listening to User Defenders with Jason Ogle.
Hey, do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
I do recall one situation, not necessarily with me, but just, this is under the awkward category, I guess. And this was, I remember a client walking a user, you know, just somebody who he put an ad, you know, to do some testing, and he was walking him through the application, but it was like, you know, it was like he was leading the witness, you know, if we were going to, and right. So it was like, wait, so when you click on that, do you feel this, you know? And it was so painful to watch, you know, it was like, what are you doing? You know, who are you doing this for? And this is before, you know, before we had, you know, such great services like usertesting.com, which I strongly suggest. I've used them before.
Me too.
And I will in the future, and fantastic. But that was a very painful and awkward moment, you know.
And let me guess, it was the designer that was running the test.
No, it was the CEO.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because he seemed really emotionally invested in the product.
Oh, no, he was. And, you know, I won't go into what happened next, but he definitely was. But I don't know. Talking to listen to yourself talk.
And, you know, that's a skill that takes a lot of time. And, you know, the only way to get better is to do it. Yeah. So
yeah.
I appreciate that. And I'm
practice makes progress.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users?
It's empathy. And if I am not in a state of mind where I'm humble enough to know that I do not know everything. And here's a good one, you know, what you don't know will always surpass what you do know. And if I'm not in that state, which happens, you know, I try to pretend I am.
Nice.
So, you know, so it's kind of like fake it till you make it, even if it's just on a momentary basis, and, you know, and you have that. But those, it's really important. It's really important.
Absolutely. And you did kind of answer that already a little earlier on with empathy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's the best answer possible. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and like I said, you know, empathy is a result. Empathy is a result. And I think, you know, for me, it's patience and perseverance. That's how I'm able to get that result. At least that's how it is. As of December 8th, 2015, I am open to change.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, and this is a lead up into the final question of this segment, but
sure.
One of the things that you said when you were screening me, for our interview, which I really appreciate you doing that. I really respect you for that. In our pre-conversation before this, one of the things you said really stood out to me. It was about, you said something to the effect of you see UX dying, you see UX in itself going away. And maybe that'll segue into your answer to this question, but I want to ask you, what does the future of UX look like to you?
It kind of falls into that trends category, where UX has more become a buzzword than anything. And unfortunately it's aligned with this, you know, with this idea of somebody being a unicorn, you know, and somebody being that person that is able, you know, that full stack designer, you know, or, you know, which there's not,
I still don't know
reality.
What that is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, UX, everybody's in charge of the UX. If you are making a product, you know, and you're part of that team, you are in the user experience, you are establishing that user experience, you know. And what I think, and what I really see, and I see it kind of happening already, is that, you know, there's going to be a separation, and for lack of better terms, and hopefully I don't get hit by this, I am a feminist, but separating the men from the boys, you know. And I think there's going to be a parting of the sea, and those who align with a specific strategy and they're able to properly articulate and practice their skill sets, are the ones that are going to be left. And I believe, you know, that this strategy can be, you know, a select type of jobs to be done methodology. Like I said before, I try to practice ODI, outcome driven innovation, just in how I work, you know. But I think it's important, and people that are getting into this, they're starting to really see guidance of people who've, you know, kind of been down the road. You know, if you want what somebody has, you do what they do. And it's good to see where it actually leads you years down the road, and where you land, because if you're building a career off of this and you're really, really, really passionate for the user experience, you need to be able to have a value prop, and you know, and it needs to be something that shows. And sometimes with this career, it almost goes against things that we were taught to do, you know, early on, you know, like portfolios. You know, how do I really represent myself as a user experience designer, when all I have to show are these specific examples, you know, versus a methodology and a way to solve another problem that has nothing to do with those specific examples, you know. So there is a more open to interpretation type of theme going on here when it comes to UX, and I strongly suggest that's something that you're able to define now, you know, because that's what I feel is going to separate, you know, what the future looks like.
Great answer, Cal. I was thinking about something Chloe Bregman said on her episode 6, too. She said, you know, don't get caught up in titles. I think that's sort of like, it's so easy for us. Don't get caught up in titles like UX design. Just do what you're good at. Keep it simple. Solve problems. Delight the user. Bam.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's... Right? That's... Yeah, I just went a little long-winded.
No,
I will say I completely.
No, I loved your answer though.
I completely second that, and that's, you know, and that's why I ask people. I'm like, what do you love to do? What do you really love to do? What are you good at doing? What do you want to be good at doing? And that's it. And let's see where that falls. You know. Yeah. And sometimes I'll hear straight up, it'll be like, I want to be a UX designer because that's what people are hiring right now, and I want to make this money. And I'm like, okay, well, own that. Okay, you want then own that. Don't pretend you're anything else but that.
Right. Yeah.
And that's okay. You
know? And don't feel like you have to be a unicorn because you don't.
Exactly.
Let's wrap up the show with superpowers. Thanks for that. Cal, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
That's easy. Draw.
Oh.
Draw.
Yes.
You know what? I come from a family, it's just funny, you know, I come from a family of painters, just extremely talented painters, and then on the other side, beautiful singers. My father had a voice that's just epic. I mean, he would be invited to do such amazing performances, and still to this day, people talk about him, and I don't have any of that. And so, but at the same time, you don't have to, it doesn't matter, but draw everything, you know, when I'm talking to somebody and if I have a chance, and this question does come up, in different forms, I always pull out my Adobe Draw, which used to be Adobe Ideas, and I've been using it since. And this is how I draw, and everything I do, I draw, and I go ahead for, I would say, I don't even know how long, I can't even guess. It's got to be several minutes. But I scroll through my drawings as I'm talking to them, and they just see this endless reel. Everything you make, you know, draw before you make it. Whether you're comfortable on paper, whether you're comfortable digitally, it doesn't matter. My drawings are equivalent to whiteboard sketches. You know, they're not crazy elaborate, but everything that you do, draw it beforehand. And being able to... separate it from the actual visual design, because that's the visual design, and you know that pretty paint job is just not going to be pretty, you know, unless you have your foundation set right. And I believe that everything starts with a drawing, and then the other thing is just, you know, having mentors, having whether you're lucky enough to have people around you that are better than you, or you have to reach out, but there'll always be people that have what you want. And I cannot emphasize that enough, of what, you know, how much growth you can experience when you're challenged.
Totally agree. And getting back to drawing too, I feel like that is such a great point. I'm so glad that, you know, that that's your recommended tool, because it's really something that we can all do. Even if it looks really bad, if we think it looks bad, we can at least get our ideas out, and we can, and the more we do it, drawing is like a muscle, and the more we exercise it, the stronger we get. And it also helps with our lean movement here. You know, like why start laying down layers in Photoshop and spending hours trying to make it pixel perfect when you can just draw it and see if it even is going to, you know, we'll pass the test on paper.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of time, so that's great. And mentorship, huge. Couldn't agree more. I just got a mentor recently, so I'm very, very thankful for that.
He's very cool.
Helping me out a lot already. So,
nice.
Cal, if you could recommend one book to your listeners, what would it be and why?
I always say that my start into this career, into this field, was when I was a child reading Choose Your Own Adventure books. And I think that's how I... am able to globally define UX, and it's being able to align with those all those different adventures and have them come together. You know, one of my hobbies when I was a kid is I would take apart all the stories and see where they align. You know, where their timeline actually went and how they can connect. And I used to do this when I was a kid, and this is what I do now. And you know, if this user is feeling discouraged in this view, what is shown here, you know, it's the same thing. But if we were going to go down, and I'm definitely a strong advocate in textbooks and just reading in general, just how things evolve in advance. But if I was going to call out something else, another book that was just extremely helpful when it comes to strategy, I would say What Customers Want. It's by Tony Ulrich, and again I've said it a couple times, but it basically is everything, you know, besides going to its actual website, but it's everything you'd want to know about ODI, outcome driven innovation, as a strategy. And I cannot stress that enough of how much that's helped me to define how I'm able to position and solve problems with my customers.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that answer. You know, the choose your own adventure, the fiction stuff, and then offering something I can link to in the show notes. So I'll be sure to do that as well.
Sure. It's a bestseller on Amazon. Great book.
Awesome. Last question, Cal. What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
I think I'll just sum it up in a couple points that we already covered, because it's kind of what I feel like we've been talking about this whole time,
right?
You know? And it's you know, if you want what somebody has, you do what they do, and not what they choose to show you publicly. Mm-hmm. But you know, if they are somebody who does have a public figure that they feel that they need, you know, a public persona that they need to show online or whatever that is, get past that. And see, you know, who they really are, you know, if you really want what they have, to understand and to really feel connected with that. It's really important. And then most importantly, own your skill sets. Own your skill sets. You know, if you're somebody who really loves production work, or you like measuring out pixels, or you like just, you know, the idea of being crafty in Illustrator with your rounded corners and your measurements and things like that, you know, and I'm going really nitty gritty here, but own it, you know, market it, market yourself around it. You know, it's like we talked about, nobody's perfect at everything. You know, painting that picture is boring. It's boring because it's not sincere. It's not. No matter how much you think, you know, you're not. You know, you go, you know, it's so great. You see these matured designers, you know, you know, Louis Mantilla, right? It's a great example. You know, he defines himself as, you know, this awesome illustrator, and he's gone to that point. Yes, he does app design, and he's done a ton of other stuff in his career, but you know, as far as his icon illustration work right now, it's just primo, and that's what he revolved his new brand around. And I think that's the way to go, you know, and that's kind of like the tune to follow. You know, get to a point, you know, where you're happy and confident, both monetary and emotionally, you know, and accept what that actually really, what that really looks like for you. You know, it's, you're not gonna, if you're not happy what you do, it's, you know, it's just, is it really worth it? That's just so key.
Own your skill set, be more of who you are. Love it. What's one thing you're working on that you're most excited about right now?
Oh, okay. Hands down, it is Spark for iPad. I've been so blessed in my career to work for my favorite companies, you know, Apple, Evernote, you know, and one of my main contracts right now is Readle, and making just robust and powerful productivity, just obvious, simple and beautiful is what they're all about, and that's what I'm all about. And it's fantastic. You know, we were able to we worked really hard on Spark for Mac, which is an email client. I'm sorry, Spark for iPhone, which is an email client. Actually, yesterday we just announced that Spark for Mac is coming next year. So there I go leaking. No, maybe not. So yeah, Spark for iPad, fantastic. And then also, you know, all this news about Mailbox shutting down. I'm really happy to say that Spark for iPhone is actually getting some really juicy updates next week. That and you can check out the Twitter Spark Mail. You can check out the Twitter feed so you can see a little video of it right now that was just put out. But you know, best type of snoozing. You know, for people who love Mailbox and really like the snoozing feature, we worked really hard on it. So we got that coming out in the next week or so. So that I'm super stoked about, you know. And then I have an update that is in review right now for Apple. So in the Mac App Store for Playing is this is actually under my own brand, but Playing is the best way to share your media and continuously keep on playing. So check that out too. You can just go to playing.com, and Playing is always with two A's, or just check out the hashtag Playing. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that, Cal. And
yeah.
All right. Cal, as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Sure. I always tell people they can Google me. I'm one of the only Cal Michaels on this planet. So Cal Michael, Cal with a K.
An uppercase L.
Yeah, with an uppercase L. There's a story to that, but maybe another time. Any social network, just Cal Michael, all one word. Websites, anything like that, I'm pretty reachable right now.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for being here today, Cal. I really love talking to you. I love your passion. I love your authenticity. I just want to say fight on, my friend.
Thanks, man. It's great.
Really love Cal's no-nonsense approach to design in his career. And he's got such a heart for people and mentoring, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have him on the show. He's got great design sensibilities, and I highly recommend you check out some of the exciting projects Cal is working on. I'll be sure to link those up in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening and sharing your enthusiasm for the show. It means a ton to me. If you're enjoying the show, I'd leap over tall buildings if you'd take a minute and leave a rating and review on iTunes. There's a link in the show notes that will teleport you right to it. Also, together we make a powerful force, so get on the weekly email list at userdefenders.com/join to find out who the next super guest is and get my usable thought of the week that's only published there. I want to thank Cesar Lemus for the astonishing superhero artwork and Chris Combs for the superhuman editing. The compelling show music was created and produced by Wyman Gentry. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next week, fight on, my friends.